Xin chào.
Annyeonghaseyo.
Sawasdee ka.
Sawasdee. Ni hao.
Xin chào.
Mingala wa.
Kamusta ka?
Everybody, welcome to Dragon Radio. This is Dragon Radio 56. I'm your host, Tony Reno. Welcome to the show. We've got a great show for you today. I spent some time last month, May 29th through the 31st, at the Music Matters Conference here in Hong Kong, and I was able to meet some pretty cool people at the conference, and I've got some of those interviews for you today. Also, some music related to those interviews. The first interview we have today is Ian Stewart. He's the Vice President of Research and Planning at MTV Asia. And we've got some music from Thailand after his interview. Then we also got an interview with Kaiser Kuo, who's a legendary guitar player from the Tang Dynasty group, who was China's first heavy metal band. But now he's in a new band. They're called Spring and Autumn. And we've got that music as well. And finally, music from Malaysia. One of the artists there at the show was Sasi the Don. He's the Asian dance hall king from Malaysia, and we've got an interview with him and some music from him. So it's going to be a pretty well-rounded show. I'd like to thank everybody at Music Matters. The staff there was great. It's kind of hard sometimes being in the press room, and sometimes you're not treated very well, but the people at Branded Asia really treated the press extremely well, and I'd like to thank them for their hospitality. So thank you. You know who you are. And also, I met some new friends there at the show, Mark and Lara and Lizette. Lizette, thanks for the Filipino music. We're going to play some on the show, future shows. It's always great to have a great source of music from Asia, and so making those bonds and meeting you was a very lucky thing for me. Finally, I'd like to mention, if you're going to be in New York City June 22nd through July 8th, please check out the New York Asian Film Festival. If you want more information, please check out my website in the culture section. Look for the NYAFF link and go there. So let's start the show right now. This is our interview with Ian Stewart, the Vice President of Research and Planning at MTV Asia. He's a great guy. He's another 39-year-old with gray hair, so I felt a bond with him immediately. And we talked about the state of music in the internet and also music in Asia. So here's the interview right here on Dragon Radio, dragonradio.hk.
One of the things we do on Dragon Radio is I try to expose English-speaking audience to Asian music. And I saw in your presentation that you mentioned how in Asia, the music crosses cultures. Do you think the having an English language audience, they're going to have a barrier getting into Asian music? Do you think they can cross the...
I think there's been Asian artists like Coco Lee, or now Tata Young, F4 from Taiwan, the boy band, Rain, Jay Chou. They've all experimented with English lyric, and I think that opens themselves up to a certain extent. But I think it's more thematic than that. I think, you know, taking those examples and then isolating Coco Lee and Tata Young have taken the Asian thematic away and sung with a Western thematic and in English.
Yeah.
And they've managed to get into Australia or get into America, but I would say with mixed results. I think the reason why Asian bands cross Asian borders is because the thematic's the same. Mm. I think for us as Westerners, so to speak, you know, we listen to Mandopop, Cantopop, K-pop, J-pop, and for us it's all the same thematic, but it's not the sort of music that we listen to. Mm. So we tend to shy away from it. It's very soapy, it's very soppy,
yeah,
all that sort of stuff. But when you're inside that culture, so you've got a singer from Korea singing in that sort of style and vein in Korean to a kid in Taiwan or China, they're listening much more to the mood and the melody and the feeling of the song, even if they don't understand the lyric.
Sure.
Which is quite interesting, because we don't do that in our own sort of similar paradigm that we're sitting in the US or Australia getting off on some German indie band.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a unique North Asian property that they go beyond the lyric to a certain extent.
One of the things that's happening, I've seen at least in TV stations, referring to MTV and your role at MTV, a lot of TV stations, ABC for example, is going on the internet. They're putting all their content on the internet with commercials. Does MTV Asia plan on following that kind of model and moving, you know, more away from the TV part of MTV and onto
sure.
the internet?
I mean, we would love to. As a 25-year-old brand globally and as a 10-year-old brand in Asia, fortunately consumers see us as being pioneers and innovators in the media space. which has been great. You know, we launched reality TV, and you know, lots of different initiatives have come from us. We would love to give kids what they want, and from what we understand in our research, kids want to be able to go online to say an MTV channel website, choose the video that they like or what people are talking about, and from there have it programmed into their own hour of selected videos. Mm-hmm. So say they choose the latest Justin, and it says, oh, if you like this Justin one, I'm sure you're going to like this. So you drag that across and drop it, and drag that across and drop it. Right? So we know that that's the perfect solution. There is no company in the world that's currently providing that legally, because there is no such thing as a global copyright for online music video distribution. Mm-hmm. The same as the offline world, music copyright's done on a country-by-country, case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. That's okay when you've got physical sales. So you do the rights for CD copyright in Hong Kong, and you physically buy a CD in Hong Kong and you pay the royalties. It's very, very hard to police that, apart from IP address, but that can be got around. So the thing that's holding back our entire industry, despite the frustration of knowing that that's what kids want, is an industry-to-industry copyright thing that's being alleviated. It's being alleviated at the moment, and the reason it is because of some of these social networking sites that are already uploading illegal content, video content, that we're now sort of cracking down on and saying, wait a minute, you know, we want to give the real stuff.
So I know there are some MTV podcasts as far as talking about the internet and actually what I'm doing. How do you envision podcasting and user-generated content to fit into your content and together?
Yeah, I think we've played around being pioneers in lots of different things. We've done some stuff in the US and Australia and Korea and Japan where we've played around with user-generated content. So kids have uploaded their own videos and they've created their own playlists and they've done this and that, you know, whatever. I think that's an interesting space to play in, but it's also a little bit away from our core competency, which is either generating our own content that people really like Pimp My Ride or Punk'd or Cribs or Laguna Beach or whatever. That's one area of our business. That's what we call the long form. In the short form, we're far better off as a carrier of other people's content, be it user generated or not. But I think our core competency and why people come to us is for music videos. You know, the labels give us that we then are the broadcaster of for what kids do. And it was interesting, some of the speakers this morning talking about turning on MTV in the US and not seeing any music. And we've certainly learnt from that in Asia.
Yeah.
And we're very, very much focused on far more music and far less long form.
How is the health of the music industry in Asia? I mean, as far as you said, the labels come to you and they want to push their content on.
Sure.
Are they? Is it mature? Is it maturing? What stage is the music industry here? The pop music industry,
yeah,
I guess.
I'm looking at it from different angles. You know, from a consumer point of view, it's never been so vibrant. You know, our research says that kids are consuming more music, they're more passionate, you know, they're accessing more stuff, they've got more devices to play on the go. So from a listening point of view, it's fantastic. Which means from a platform and broadcast point of view, it's also good because they need to have places to acquire their content. So MTV is a platform for content distribution videos, so you know, we're doing quite well. Our ratings and our viewership is up quite well.
What is MTV doing to maybe cultivate... most of the music that I've seen on MTV Asia is quite pop-based. Is MTV Asia doing anything to cultivate, say, other genres like, you know, alternative rock, hip-hop, that kind of thing?
Funnily enough, most of our music at the moment is quite mainstream hip-hop, R&B, which is the new pop. So, yeah, that's the common denominator for kids between 15 and 24. Over the last 3-4 months on the Asia channel, we've moved a lot more UK indie, guitar, electro, stuff like that in. Initially sort of late at night for older adults, and then we found that kids don't mind a little bit of Arctic Monkeys and a little bit of Chemical Romance and the whole emo trend. But we have to be very cognizant to not be too niche and marginal, because that's not our role in the world. You know, as much as a lot of us within MTV would love to have our music that might be a little bit less mainstream, 80% of the people that watch us want Justin Timberlake.
You know,
that's the fact.
And what's the ratio of international artists to local artists on the programming?
It's not a fixed amount, but it averages out at 80% local.
80% local.
Or 80% local language for the Chinese different channels, and 20% international. And the 20% international is primarily UK and England, and America. And then it's a mix. It used to be a sort of 90% hip-hop R&B, and now it's about 60% hip-hop R&B, and the rest is indie. So we're really playing off both the UK indie scene and the US emo scene.
Okay. One of the my theories, at least as far as the pirating and people sharing files and music is pricing. Obviously, in Asia, there's a different economic structure and economies. What do you think, in your personal opinion, what do you think the Asian youth are willing to pay for a CD, or what is the price? You know, in the States, we pay about $15. Here in Asia, in any of your research, have you gauged that kind of...
I think most kids would like it as cheap or as free as they can get it, because their current paradigm, sadly, is if you don't give it to me for very cheap, I'll go and find the new Bjork CD next minute and I'll have it within 5 minutes. So it's a shame that supply-demand price expectations have gone right down. But to use a really interesting case study from Thailand, which I think is possibly a blueprint for the future, in Thailand, pirated CDs were 100 baht, which is $2, and the locally produced local record label CDs were 300 baht, so three times as much, so $6. 3 years ago, they dropped the price of the proper CDs down to 140 baht, so 20-odd% above the pirated ones. And what they found is that all the kids migrated across from the pirated ones because they got the quality recording, they got the lyrics, the nice jacket, and actually, underneath all of their shameless guilt, or lack of guilt, so they suddenly came out and said, wait a minute, now I'm supporting my favorite artist. So I think the Thais did a very, very clever job of finding out that price elasticity point. And I dare say they did it with research. So they probably found out that if it was 200 baht, so double the price of a pirated, you wouldn't get the migration. If it was 110 sort of baht, so 1% of the thing, people would say, well, this is all a bit crazy, you've been ripping us off. So they picked it very, very well, and it's working well. So
that's interesting. Last question, your favorite Asian band right now, what is your personal...
I'm a bit biased because I spent a lot of time in Thailand, but I think that there's two or three major scenes going on in Thailand right now which are unbelievable. There's been a real overturn of the big major labels. There's a very healthy indie scene, and it's spearing off into three directions. It's going down a really, really nice localized hip-hop direction where a guy and his group called Joey Boy is fusing really, really nice Thai with accessibility for international listeners, a bit Japanese-style hip-hop, a little bit of reggae. So he's really cool. And he's a 10-year survivor. He's kind of fusing into the reggae scene that's down there as well, and there's some really, really interesting reggae singers. There's a singer down there called Zom, Z-O-M, and she's sort of rockabilly meets ska meets reggae with a Thai meets English kind of vibe, which is really, really cool. So she's jamming away. And then sort of more following the UK indie scene up down in Thailand, there's a whole bunch of guitar bands. There's a band called Modern Dog. We're very much, again, 10 years around, pioneers of the whole sort of starting out with that real sort of aggressive blur guitar sound earlier, and now they're I mean, not that they mirror, but they're very much the sort of Arctic Monkeys, Libertines sort of stuff. So I kind of think that's a really nice way of taking the freshest stuff globally in a true local themes, local language. You kind of hear, well, that sounds a little bit like London, but you know that it's Thai, so that seems exciting to me.
That's what I'm thriving on with Dragon Radio is I think that's the key to opening up the English language audiences, give them a taste, so it sounds like maybe the Arctic Monkeys, but it's in Thai whatever. So.
And there's the good learning on how it works in North Asia, because I haven't been able to understand how that Korean thing translates to Taiwan, translates to Hong Kong, because of that thematic that I can't access. But now, sort of, I can hear other aesthetics that I can get into, and like you say, it becomes a sort of, the lyrics do become less important because the rest of the experience is kind of nice. So.
Have you spent much time in the States working for the American company? I'll ask this question again. Do you think ever there will be a day where there will be an Asian artist that will make it big in the States, or non-English?
I think the U.S. is harder to crack. I think the U.S. is hard to crack, not just for Asian acts, you know, for European acts for sure. And we've seen so many case studies of that. So I think that probably... harder. I think if it comes, it'll come in from the hip-hop arena, and if it comes from hip-hop, it'll come from Japan. I think, you know, people like Nigo at Bathing Ape is doing a relatively good job linking up with Pharrell and bringing his whole teriyaki boys out to the world, and you know, that's kind of interesting. I think that kind of resonates with the US audience. I think going into Europe and the UK, which is probably an easy market to get into but a harder one aesthetically to get into, you've got bands like Futon, again from Thailand, and Futon's a collective of Thai singers, English, including the ex bass player from Suede. Got some Japanese people. They sing in, like, the whole song can have English, Thai, Japanese, the whole thing going off.
Wow.
And they're very much like, you know, the Ramones meet Miss Kitten, sort of real old school indie versus you know, current electro, and they're storming London. They go over every couple of months. They pack these little venues. They're really, really theatrical and quirky, and you could sit there looking at them in London going, well, maybe they're from Thailand, but actually maybe they're from Hoxton, that sort of thing. So yeah, maybe they're not going to sell 10 million records, but they're probably the future of Asian bands that are going over, like Electrico in Singapore as well.
Yeah. It's bands like that and the bands you mentioned that give me hope that the work I'm doing is actually opening some ears.
Well, I think so too, and without wanting to be specific on the people like Tada Young and Coco Lee, because I think they're fantastic and I know them, but maybe their producers have made them try and become something that appeals to a different audience. Maybe not for Tata, because she's actually half English anyway, but you look at bands like Electrico from Singapore and Profana from Japan and Vuitton from Thailand. They're not trying to be anything, you know. They are who they are. They happen to be bilingual, trilingual, but they rock over to New York or London and they just do their gig, and that's the sort of authentic passion that people go, oh, okay, that's cool.
Okay, well, I thank you for your time.
No worries,
I really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see you sometime soon.
From Thailand, Zom Amara, and from her CD Za Amarom, that was Rabia Rat, a song about teenage society in Thailand. Favorite artist of Ian Stewart. Thanks, Ian, for turning us on to this artist. Actually, this is a girl that I had seen when she first came out in Thailand a couple years ago. I was sitting next to her on the MTR, their subway system, without really knowing who she was. I knew she was a local artist, but she's really come a long way. Her name is Zom Amara, and check out her link on my website in the artist section. You can find out more about her. Okay, let's go to our next interview. I had a chance and was really surprised to meet him. Kaiser Kuo, who is the guitar player for China's first real heavy metal band, Tang Dynasty. And now he's in a new band called Spring and Autumn. And I was able to sit down with him for a quick couple of minutes and find out what he's been up to lately, and also his take on Beijing's music scene. So here's the interview right here on Dragon Radio, dragonradio.hk.
And so can you tell me a little bit about this band, Spring and Autumn?
Yeah, we usually don't use the English name. We just call ourselves Swincho.
Okay.
It doesn't mean the same thing as it does in its literal translation. There are some people who have sort of said this is Tang Dynasty Redux. There is some similarity. They're both sort of in the progressive metal vein, if you would. I think there's been a totally different approach, though. We tend to have more traditional songwriting structures in this band. The music is heavier. It's a little more aggressive, a little less wanky. But similar insofar as that it blends recognizably Chinese elements into the metal idiom.
Are you using Chinese instruments within the recording?
There's actually no real Chinese instrumentation on this. There's guitar playing that sounds like piba, or guitar playing that sounds like guzheng, mm-hmm. acoustic guitars that sound like guzheng. The Chinese zither. There's a banjo patch on a synthesizer that sort of sounds Chinese-ish on some of our songs.
Yeah. Okay. What's your favorite track on this CD?
I don't really. If there's one that I think is probably the most representative of the direction, probably track number 5, Legend.
Okay.
That's a good one. Track number 3, Call from Afar. That should be Afar.
And this is all sung in English?
It's all in Mandarin. Okay. Entirely in Mandarin.
And where did you record this?
This is recorded in a studio owned in central Beijing, or sort of northeastern central Beijing, owned by Peter Chen, who's a very important songwriter from Taiwan in the 1970s and then 1980s. He's built a very nice studio. It's just a Pro Tools studio. Mm-hmm. Good room. It was produced by an American by the name of Jamie Welton, who happens to also be the lead singer of an AC/DC cover band that I play in as well.
Yeah, I saw that on your blog, Dirty Deeds.
Yeah.
How's that going?
We haven't gigged a lot recently. Everyone's really busy. We've all got day jobs. But
okay.
It's a whole lot of fun when we play.
Yeah, well, how could you not have fun playing AC/DC
exactly,
songs?
Exactly.
Are you touring to support this CD?
This CD's a year old. We toured a bit in support of it, not really aggressively. The label is a very, very small, very indie label, and doesn't have the kind of infrastructure to be able to support a national tour. The main inhibiting factor, though, was that I had a day job and I couldn't travel for it. So right now we're still playing. We're going out on weekends often. Just they'll go early, or I'll fly in and fly out just to play shows on weekends.
Okay. And can I get your feeling or comment about the Beijing music scene? And,
sure.
And especially the metal and the punk and the underground. With the Olympics coming up, is the underground scene and the music scene in general coming up to meet and prepare for all the visitors that are coming to Beijing for the Olympics?
I think everyone sees it as a pretty good opportunity. They recognize that there is a lot of interest from the foreign community, and I think that if it weren't for the foreign community in Beijing, a lot of these scenes wouldn't have started in the first place. They've always been very good at garnering the attention of the foreign press.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they definitely see it as an excellent opportunity. More generally on the scene, I'm increasingly optimistic. We've got good infrastructure in place. And that's, good guitar stores that are well stocked. We've got good venues with decent PAs, mm-hmm. sound guys who are starting to learn their way around their boards.
Cool.
We've got, I think a steadily increasing quality of general musicianship, mm-hmm. not just raw chops, I'm talking, but
musical sensibilities, songwriting abilities. So I'm hearing more and more stuff that I like.
Cool.
And from a wider and wider variety of genres.
And other than the clubs, is there radio support or TV support?
There's really, really occasional TV support. I mean, it's spotty at best. There was one channel that ran a whole series of live rock performances for a while, and I mean, some pretty serious headbanging metal stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still really rare that you see mainstream television. It's still, as you probably well know, all the genres that you've talked about, rock, metal, and punk, and so forth. They're all very marginal, very peripheral to the mainstream, and you know they really still define themselves in opposition to that pablum that the vast majority of Chinese people still regard as music.
Okay. And do you have any favorite bands right now in Beijing or China?
Sure. There's a band out of Shanghai I quite like called Cold Fairyland, I think they call
themselves. Oh, yeah, I've played them on the show.
Yeah. I quite like them. In Beijing, there's this really trippy band called Voodoo Kung Fu.
Yeah, I played them as well.
Okay.
Have you heard of Tuku?
Yeah, Tuku. I know those guys. I'm not particularly into that rap metal stuff. I mean, it's tolerable, but the new metal stuff I'm not crazy about. My favorite metal band by far is a band called Suffocated. They're fabulous. They're a fabulous metal band.
And if there's anything you could change in the Beijing music scene, what would it be? If you could, you know, wave a magic wand and just change it instantly, what would it be?
If I could wave a magic wand, I would, you know, multiply the number of metal fans by 1,000, but it's just not going to happen. More realistically, I would love to see everyone just swap their PAs out and scrub them clean and make them sound good. I mean, if there's nothing that turns off potential fans worse, it's a badly tuned PA in a club. I mean, you go there just and you know they're playing their little hearts out on stage, but if the sound quality isn't there, then
sure. And what in Beijing? What is the best club with the best PA?
I'm hearing that it's Mao these days,
okay.
Which I haven't played at yet. I've been in, but I haven't played there yet. It does have a nice PA. Star Live started off with a lot of promise, and I think that it's been sort of largely unfulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
Another club. Those are the two that I would say.
For the future, if people want to catch up with what you're doing, what's your blogs? You have one or two blogs already?
I've got one current live blog right now. And I, unfortunately, I've just been too busy to really update regularly, but that's at KaiserKuo, all one word, KaiserKuo.typepad.com.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time to meet me, and I look forward to hearing the CD.
All right. Well, enjoy.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Kaiser Kuo's latest recording effort, if you don't count the Dirty Deeds cover band he's in, that was Spring and Autumn and their song Legend from the Spring and Autumn CD. It was released last year, as he said in the interview, but they are going to start touring for support of this CD. So if you're in the Asian region, please look for him. I would guess they'd probably start the tour in Beijing, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, let's get to the final interview of the show. This is another surprise I had. I didn't expect to see many artists at the event, at the Music Matters event, but came across a new guy called Sasi the Don. He's the Asian dance hall king, and we talked to him a little bit about how he got into music, the cross-cultural aspects of music, and also the Malaysian music scene, and we've got a song from him as well. So this is Sasi the Don right here on Dragon Radio, dragonradio.hk.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me, talk to Dragon Radio.
Yeah, Dragon Radio.
let's start from the beginning. Explain where you're from and how you got into music.
Okay, I'm from Malaysia, and Malaysia being a country with so much of opportunity, I mean, knowing for a fact it's a developing country, and I come from a very a family that is so focused that, you know, education is important, you got to study and all this kind of thing, and because of that competition, I had to put up with my parents and, you know, do my studies first and got everything graduated, you know. But in the same time, I had passion for music, you know. I always loved music, and I grew up listening to reggae, and I mean, I picked up music ever since I was 12. You know, I played the piano and I got a grade 7. I didn't finish my diploma in it. And as the whole interest, it was all just partial here and there. I wasn't a performer in school. And when I got into college, it was the first time that I actually went into a club for the first time. You know, and when I was in the club, I saw the way people were enjoying music. You know, I never had that exposure before. And that was like when I was 17, you know, and when I got into the first club in my life. And I actually got hooked up with the way DJs play music. You know, I always had that passion to play music for people. And I picked up DJing skills in back in the 96. You know, I started playing music. I used to spin in club match charting in Malaysia. And I used to play in a couple of clubs in KL and all that. But I was more, I knew that I was doing it as a hobby. It was not focused to be that. I didn't tell myself that I'm going to be a DJ in life. You know, I wanted to be cool. Because when you're a student and you're a DJ,
to date girls or
not that, but you know, you're just seen cool because you're a DJ.
Yeah,
you know, among your friends, everyone goes. I mean, the other part of it, I was thinking, I love to party.
Okay,
you know, why should I go and spend money to party when I can be paid to party?
You know? That's a good attitude. Yeah.
So I picked that up, and from then, I realized the kind of music I was playing, and I saw that people had the love for it. You know, I used to play a lot of dancehall, I used to play a lot of raga music, and the best part of it, I used to play a lot of instrumentals where I used to drop my own verse on it.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
So people used to find this interesting. From then, I discovered that little talent in me. You know, I was never born with that singing talent to be a singer in life. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but I discovered that little talent, which I started exploring it. From that, I started writing lyrics on my own. You know, I started thinking of my own composition, I started thinking of songs that I should write. And working from Malaysia itself, knowing for a fact that I'm an Indian, you know, and you want to break into the whole mass market of Malaysia, you have to have support of your own people first. So in 2000, I had the opportunity to release my first album, which was it's a Tamil album. Okay. It was fully in Tamil, and it was very pop. It had a few of my raga influence in it, but I didn't do it much in there. Mm. And but from that album, it was my stepping stone, and from there, I had opportunities because I was the only Indian act that actually could socialize with non-Indians. Mm-hmm. You know, because the other races, the other people could accept my music. You know, because I was friendly.
Sure.
You know, my music was very friendly, even though they don't understand what I'm saying, say, but it's just friendly.
You could still dance to
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so that is something that I understood from that point of time. It's not about the language you sing, but it's about the music and what people, the chemistry they have with it. Mm-hmm. And from that point, I realized that you need to write songs which would actually compromise with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I started focusing on what reggae is all about, dancehall music. I started getting strict into it. But I didn't want to be a Malaysian who's trying to be a copycat of trying to do Jamaican sound. You know, mm-hmm. I'm Malaysian, I'm Asian.
Yeah.
So you want to have your own flavor, your ethnicity in it.
Yeah.
So Jamaicans call it dancehall, and I started calling my music Asian dancehall.
Cool.
You know, it's a different brand.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you talk about Asian dancehall, being an Asian, you're versatile with so many languages. So I started taking advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And I love listening to Chinese to Chinese music, stuff that come from Asia and, you know, from Japan, from Taiwan. I'm versatile in what mm-hmm. I listen. And I believe that musicians should be like that. It's when you start respecting what other people do.
Sure.
You know, just because you come from Malaysia doesn't mean you can't perform in America.
Yeah.
You know, just because you're from America doesn't mean you should be all the king and queen to be treated in this part of the world.
Yeah.
And I think that we should have that the respect. And I think I have a lot of respect for people that I work with and people that I talk, like, for example, you and your listeners out there.
Thank
because I foresee the effort that people are taking to broadcast music, to position music, to market music, and I want to be a part of everyone's dream. You know, and like how Apache Indian supported and helped me, I want to help a lot of other people.
Cool.
You know, I want to work with young musicians, I want to work with successful people, yes. And with this drive, it will actually inspire a lot of musicians to actually work that way. Mm-hmm. What will happen if everyone is frustrated with music and give up music?
Yeah.
Entertainment is going to stop. You won't hear sound.
Yeah.
You won't hear good music anymore if everyone decides, you know what, let's stop music, let's stop producing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we can't do that because that's when we keep on going. We want to cross culture. We want to create the bridge. We want to create the revolution. And all we got to do is work with one another. And it's not difficult if you feel worth it to work with one.
Sure.
Why not try?
Yeah.
And it's not about money all the time. When I worked with Apache Indian, being a superstar, he never charged me any money.
Wow, that's great.
He told me, it's for the passion. I want to do it with you.
Great.
And when he came down to Singapore in 2005 to perform for WOMAD, he got me to perform with him.
Oh, wow.
In WOMAD. I mean, if I've not sang with Apache Indian, I would have not had that opportunity in my life.
Yeah.
Right? And so these are the little things that do for me, you know, when it comes to music.
Well, getting back to the language issue, why I ask all the artists is, why are you choosing English over your native language? And when you write a song, do you write it in your native language and translate it into English? Or?
Okay, good question. Actually, I have to tell you this, that I started off with my native language. Mm-hmm. And every time when I record a track, it could, even it's in English, I still have my native culture involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
My ethnicity is shown in my music.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And why I write English, because I want to cross so that other people will understand what I'm trying to say and try to do.
Okay.
But I've still not given up my ethnicity, because in every record that I release, every album, if there's 15 tracks, I'm so sure that I will at least do two songs of my mother tongue, two Tamil track, because I've got my fan base, which is huge, Indian fan base, and I don't want to lose that. And the other thing that I also do is I compromise. In a Tamil song, I bring in English. You know, I bring that whole raga thing into Tamil, and people go like, "Oh, damn, man, check this out!" So this is one of the songs that which you can actually see on my, we can hear on my website, on sasithedon.com, which you can actually hear this song called Anbe. Anbe is a successful track which I wrote in 2002, and 5 years now, and that song is still popular. And people still want that song. And releasing that song in my 2003 album, I re-released it with a different version on this new album. Mm-hmm. The reason, because there's demand for it. It was the first Tamil track ever in the history of Malaysia that crossed to all different people.
Wow.
You can be a Chinese, you could be a Malay, but they still listen to this song. I've been invited to national events just to perform that song.
Oh, great.
Okay, because people just like that song. The Tamil song, that song Anbe, also achieved playlist on the Malay radio chart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have 19 Malay songs, and suddenly you find one Indian song there, because you know people could just relate themselves to it. And I think that I've got that proper balance, because I even write songs in Malay.
Okay.
You know, to reach out to
my mass
people, and I've done one huge collaboration with the King of Rock of Malaysia, which is Amy Search.
Okay.
Amy Search is very known; he's a legend in Malaysia, right? And everyone was shocked when Sasi the Don released a track with Amy Search. Trust me, everyone was shocked. Everyone was going like, damn, how did you think about this collaboration, man? You know, it's like, I told people that I just wanted to make it happen, and I think it's fated to happen. Sometimes things just meant to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I was a kid when I saw Amy Search singing in TV. I was like, 9 years old when I saw him performing as a rock superstar on TV.
Uh-huh.
And as I grew up and all that, I never knew I was going to do a song with him.
Yeah.
You know, that one point came, and finally I'm doing a song.
Yeah. Well, the one question I want to ask you is specifically about the Malaysian music scene.
Okay.
What's the most popular genre right now? And for example, is there a lot of support within the community? Do the clubs like to have live bands? Do the radio stations play a lot of local music as opposed to foreign music?
Okay.
What is the Malaysian scene right now?
We talk about Malaysian music radio stations. Okay, let's talk about the industry first. Okay, the industry is very, very rich with talents. All right, but the only setback of the industry is the involvement of too many reality artists, artists who are discovered from reality TV shows.
Oh.
All right, they just start popping out, and this is saturating the industry. Too many artists around. But at the end, but that's not a threat to people like me and rest of the other musicians in Malaysia, because we come with grassroots and we come with a lot of suffering, and we know that we want to do this music as a business.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of people who are actually taking music serious, and we go out there to do good music. Radio stations, they do support local music, Malaysian music, very, very strongly. We have got good percentage of share of airtime sharing with the international songs and all that, and we have back to back playing international. You got Malaysian music's going in, and they've been quite supportive. And in terms of clubs, yes, DJs spin a lot of local music, and I wouldn't say that all local acts get the opportunity to go into club music to be played in club, because Malaysia is rich with different genre of music. All right, they have got a lot of ethnic stuff. You got artists doing R&B, you got artists doing hip hop. I mean, there's been a lot of successful hip hop acts in Malaysia who has actually gone even cross out of Malaysia. We've got a group called Too Fat who actually successfully recorded a song with Warren G.
Yeah, you know? I've played him on the show.
Yeah, Too Fat. Yeah. So this is the kind of chemistry we have.
Okay.
So the industry is very supportive. Yes, there's a lot of bands playing, a lot of clubs. I just did a show in Planet Hollywood last Thursday showcasing a theme called the Hip Hop Reggae in a Dancehall Style, focusing on broadcasting of Asian Jamaican sound. I played with my band. I have an 8-piece band, and you won't believe that my band's, no one is black, no one is Jamaican, they're all Malaysians, you know.
Cool.
And we all play reggae music, and on top of it, I have a lot of cultural percussions going and creating different vibes. So reggae music with me is reggae that people don't commonly hear from Jamaica or from America. I think that is important, because you always need originality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want people to go like, this is just another copycat.
Yeah, yeah.
Or why should I listen? Why should I buy? You know, because you want to have something different. And I think in Asia especially, a lot of people are having a lot of originality. And that is great, because it keeps the industry going. Yeah.
So let's finish off the interview and let's hear some of your music. Thanks for your
Definitely.
Time.
Thanks a lot.
It was a pleasure meeting
great,
you, man.
And Dragon Radio, it's all good, man. All
Thank
support
you.
From Sassy the Don.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
That's going to do it for our show. We're going to leave you with Anbe from Sassy the Don. Thanks, Sassy. I hope to see you back in Hong Kong someday and see you perform live. I'd like to thank everybody who tuned into the show, and also everybody who made themselves available for the interviews. I'd like to thank Ian, Kaiser, and Sassy. Thanks for making a great show. Tune in next week. We'll get back to the straight on music, and we'll see you right here on Dragon Radio, dragonradio.hk. Have a good week, everybody.
enemy love, enemy heart, enemy yard. Up from the north, down to the south, we could feel your voice calling out really loud. Indian girl, you are all about my world. Up, down, girls in and the downtown girls. Stand steady, wine steady, want me do the rock steady. Stand steady, wine steady, want me do the rock steady. What did I got to do? Tell me what did I got to do? To make it a mine, to make it a wine, I'll take it for a dime. As we chat about love, I'll chat about life, I'll chat about you and me. Make me come together. Dance as you would realize that me is a great lover. As me love will never favor like any other preacher. Take it from here, me girl. Me love would break any wall. And I search, me till me find.